This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The State Department of Environmental Quality says Duke Energy should be ordered to excavate most of its coal ash pits in North Carolina. At the end of the year, there was a report that said 20 of the 32 coal ash ponds in the state should be cleaned up entirely, not just covered in place. But environmental groups say that number should be higher, and they have accused DEQ of giving in to political pressure. State regulators say the new report is based on the most up-to-date information from Duke Energy. WNC's Dave DeWitt has been following the story and other environmental stories in North Carolina, and he joins me again on the State of Things. Welcome back, Dave.
Hi, Frank.
32 coal ash facilities in North Carolina. DEQ has classified them into four categories. So tell us about the categories and where these coal ash pits lie.
Well, the four categories are high risk, high intermediate, low intermediate, and low. Now, originally in the legislation passed a few years ago to clean up the coal ash, there were three: high risk, intermediate risk, and low risk. So this sort of fourth one, the low intermediate category, was kind of created by DEQ as a grouping of what they see. They say they needed more information on these eight particular facilities. Should be noted that they released that report on the very last day they were legally obliged to do that, which was New Year's Eve.
Some not a lot of attention.
Not a lot of attention
that day.
But it's getting a lot of attention now, and it should, because it's a very costly thing that's going to be undertaken. And how these ponds are categorized is really important. High and intermediate have to be, as you said, excavated. That's a much more expensive process and lengthier process. They have to get the coal ash out of the ground and put it somewhere else in a lined landfill. Low can be kept in place or not dealt with at all. So it's a very, how these things end up shaking out and what classification they're put into is going to be a very expensive decision.
And the latest report, the final report, as you say, New Year's Eve, but there was a preliminary report that was issued earlier, and that had more coal ash pits in that high-risk category.
Right, and it might not be exactly correct to say it was issued. It was put out there by the Southern Environmental Law Center. It was a draft report, the DEQ, internal draft report. They got their hands on it and put it out there at the end of November. DEQ was very upset about this. They said it was preliminary. They didn't have all the information. Things could change. And they did change. As they got more information, DEQ says they reclassified some of these coal ash ponds into this low intermediate, need more information. As you say, a lot more of those ponds were high and intermediate risk, all but one, as a matter of fact, and would have had to have been excavated. Now, this seems to play into the narrative that the Southern Environmental Law Center and others have said that DEQ is not being hard enough on Duke Energy when it comes to these coal ash.
So, but there are costs, right? Costs associated with this. And I would assume, excavation obviously much costlier than capping. And that would mean that Duke would have to pass on those costs to investors.
Customers, too.
Oh, customers. But the investors own the company. Why wouldn't the owners of the company have to pay? I guess Duke is saying they're going to pass it on to customers.
That's right. Well, Duke has not said that. But we've heard a lot from commissioners for the Coal Ash Management Commission. When they first set it up, they came right out and said it's very likely that these costs will be passed on to customers. Duke Energy, they have not said it specifically, and they haven't talked about exactly what they would do. But all things are on the table.
So
it'd be
yet.
About $3.4 billion. Right. That is their estimate. It's likely that if this many of these coal ash ponds are excavated or need to be excavated, that cost will rise precipitously.
Right. So it could go higher, and we don't know yet exactly how it's going to be passed on or how it'll be dealt with. So what happens next? What's the next step in this process?
Well, now this draft report has been released, and now the DEQ will continue to gather information on those eight ponds and make some classification suggestion on those. At the same time, this will spark some public comment sessions that will take place in January, February, probably into March, at the sites near where these coal ash pits are located. And so after that, then a final report will be put together. It will go to potentially the Coal Ash Management Commission, but that is still tied up in some legal wrangling between Governor McCrory and legislative leaders, also Republicans, about who should be appointing that committee. And then it'll eventually end up in the legislature, and they will make the determination on, how these ponds are classified and what needs to happen to these ponds. At the same time, Duke is already excavating coal ash from five of these facilities. They are moving coal ash to facilities in Lee County and Chatham County already, places in South Carolina. They are having to do this because, they aren't changing the deadline dates. One of the things we didn't talk about, high risk has to be closed by 2019. Intermediate risk ponds have to be closed by 2024. All facilities must be closed by 2029. Duke has to get on this now. And Duke Energy is getting on this, moving coal ash, doing what it can to move these things. But there's a lot of delays. The DEQ blames the federal government. The federal government blames DEQ. The Southern Environmental Law Center blames DEQ. So there's some delays going on. A lot of this is still in the courts, and we'll see how that shakes out at the same time that Duke Energy is moving.
So for these 20 ponds that are deemed, you know, at the highest risk, they have to be cleaned out. Are they at risk because there's something faulty, something corrupt about them, or is there a different technology? Because obviously they're putting them in new pits.
Right.
How safe are those, and how are they different from the ones they're coming from?
Well, the new pits are all lined, and we can go into the specifications of whether they're well-lined or not. Different people believe different things, but it's a very thick rubber liner. They're putting them in places that have been, you know, vetted a lot more than some of these old pits. It used to be you'd pull the coal ash out of a facility, you'd throw it in a pond, cover it with water, and be done with it, and check it every once in a while, make sure it's not breaking through and leaking. Of course, the Dan River spill a couple years ago changed all that. So now a lot of these ponds are leaking, and they're leaching. They're very close to rivers. They're very close to homes and neighborhoods. There are still neighborhoods that are getting water in bottles supplied by Duke Energy because of the issues surrounding these coal ash ponds. So as all of these delays mount, these problems are only getting worse, and the potential for another catastrophe like Dan River, or even worse, continues.
All right, well, coal ash is perhaps the most high-profile environmental story we followed in 2015 and through now early into 2016, but there are others, including offshore oil exploration. Now, when we last checked in, I think the governor supported it, but not many elected bodies on the coast did. Where are we now on offshore oil?
Well, in February or March, it's expected that the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management will release a draft environmental impact analysis of the offshore oil exploration in the Atlantic. There's some talk that the Obama administration, especially after the Paris climate talks last month, that they may be less enthusiastic about drilling in the Atlantic. They may change this whole program. They may decide to scrap the whole idea. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. But if it continues as it's been planned, you'll see that draft EIS come out, and then there'll be more of these sort of public comment sessions on the coast, at least two probably on the coast. The ones that were held back in the fall were very highly attended, and we saw a lot of angry people who make their living in the tourism industry or otherwise on the coast. In fact, there are 23 North Carolina coastal communities that have passed resolutions against drilling. Of course, Governor McCrory is pretty strongly for it. And so you'll see this continue to be a sort of political battle at the same time that we see this very slow-moving process to selling one lease. BOEM is talking about selling one oil drilling lease in the Atlantic. The McCrory administration wants to see at least one more. They want to see the buffer. Instead of 50 miles, it wants to be a little bit closer to get at some of the oil that can be extracted. So there's a lot of these moving parts. It's a slow-moving process, and the political winds can change it.
Well, in these moving parts, how about the regulatory process? Is the state bound by federal regulation here, or can it go it alone, depending on what EPA and other environmental groups say?
This is totally federal waters. Yeah. So that's under the auspices of the federal government. In fact, one of the things the state wants is revenue sharing, like they have in some of the Gulf states. The federal government has said nothing about revenue sharing, not doing any revenue sharing, and it doesn't have to do that. And so if it doesn't happen, the state will probably change its position. But that's something that the McCrory administration really wants and the federal government has said nothing about.
Some states can be tougher, though. Didn't we talk about Florida and its relationship with the coast? And because of its tourism industry, it's actually got some pretty tough restrictions.
That's right. And Florida doesn't want any part of this. There's no proposed sale anywhere near Florida. There's no proposed sale anywhere in the Northeast. We're talking only about a few South Atlantic states, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia.
All right. Well, Duke, and let's talk about another topic. Duke Energy and Dominion Power are moving forward with plans with the Atlantic Coast Natural Gas Pipeline. Brings natural gas from fracking fields in West Virginia and Pennsylvania to southeastern North Carolina. What's the projection for 2016 on the pipeline?
Well, not unlike offshore oil. It's a federal process run by Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. They have a draft environmental impact study that will be released in the first quarter of this year. As this is happening, Dominion, Duke Energy, and Piedmont Natural Gas have formed a coalition, and they are going out and buying rights of way from property owners in Virginia and North Carolina. And once they get all those bought up, and they're in those negotiations now, this other process will take place. FERC's draft environmental impact study will come out. There'll be more public comment sessions. This is moving along. And if it moves along, we could see ground broken on the Atlantic Coast Pipeline sometime at the end of 2016. And then it takes about 2 years to actually build the pipeline.
Yeah, so we don't know about the environmental impact. That study hasn't been released, so it's speculation at this
exactly,
point.
Exactly, yep.
All right, well, let's talk about another decision. The legislature may still freeze a mandate that requires 12.5% of energy to be produced by renewables. Big debate about how much should be, you know, where that should be capped. What's coming up in this short session?
Well, if you'll remember, in that long session, the legislature did away with solar tax credits, but the renewable energy portfolio standards are still alive. That may get addressed again in the short session. The Republicans are really split on this. You see Republicans who believe that reps are having a real economic impact positively in the state, and you see some Republicans that are saying, absolutely not, we can't subsidize this industry and not others. That debate is continuing, and it will probably continue in the short session.
All right, Dave, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Dave DeWitt, WNC's environment reporter. Just ahead, an Asheville writer traces the long and complex history of the connection between humans and pigs. You'll hear about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.